Hi, welcome to Policy Pod by LDA. My name is Matt Gauthier and I will be your host. This podcast aims to break down common trends, problems, and concepts in the life insurance industry. We wanted to create a place where we could talk openly about things that confuse both clients and advisors alike. Today, I was joined by Graham Bergsma, founder of G3 Wealth, where we discussed his journey from going from an advisor to starting G3 Wealth and the differences that agency brings him when dealing with the life insurance market. Graham has lived and worked across North America and Europe, embracing a life defined by competition, sport, exploration, and growth. With a deep love for lacrosse and travel, Graham has found joy in both the thrill of the game and the discovery of new experiences. With over a decade of experience mastering the complexities of the life insurance market, Graham strives to make the offerings and concepts relatable to anyone. He is driven by the belief that the financial services industry has too often failed to communicate value effectively and is on a mission to empower individuals with the knowledge to take control of their financial future. Welcome to Policy Pod, Graham. Good to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me, Matt. Appreciate it.
No, it's been a long time. We've been talking about having you on since, spring, early summer.
I've been thinking about since the inception of the podcast, right? Like I have been, as you know, a big fan of LDA and what you guys have been doing from the very early days with Charlie and everything else. So it's been cool to see what you guys have been doing and putting out there and being seen as not just a great tool in the industry, but now another great source for information and for perspective and context within the industry. It's really cool to see you guys taking your vision and expanding it.
No, thank you. It's been a big journey. I've been here for just over 3 years, but we've just hit our 10-year anniversary mark this year. So to 10 more years.
What a 10 years to be in tech and service in the insurance industry. Because, you know, it hasn't changed much over that time at all.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, as we were just talking before we started the recording, but last episode with Mike Stocks, they had said that their digital applications had changed in the years. So now they're up to 92% of all the applications are digital. So talk about a change. I know obviously some of that comes from the COVID transition and the forced transformation, but it's just a natural progression of things.
To me, it's one of those things that I've said a few times is that, you know, the industry doesn't really change, good clients change and we adapt. And it was, COVID was a thing, but I think, you know, it was more clients realized how they wanted to be engaged with, and certain carriers like Empire adapted to that and gave them what they wanted, and it's turned out to work out well for them. So it's nice to see that happen. So
let's talk about you. Why don't you give an introduction on yourself? Give me a bit about your background, how you came into life insurance, and then we'll talk about how you're going from agency to, or advisory to agency.
Sure. I mean, it depends on how far you want to go back. So I got my undergraduate degrees in finance and math while I was playing on a lacrosse scholarship down in the US, then got a master's degree in education, taught a little bit in the private system, was not biggest fan of the public arena for teaching and some of the support on that side. But I had actually gotten recruited by a lot of the career agencies. So you get your Freedom 55 back when that existed, Sun Life, Edward Jones, et cetera. But I was still kind of chasing my dream and ended up over in Europe coaching and running a lacrosse program, and then was a professor in Michigan and coaching in the NCAA. And then eventually I was like, all right, this nomad lifestyle needs to end. And I came back to Ontario and I reached back out to all of those organizations that had recruited me in the first place and took a look, and it was a tight race amongst them, but I ended up choosing London Life, Freedom 55 Financial. I really saw eye to eye with the manager who had recruited me, Adam Gordon, there. And that was kind of, it made sense, right? Like, you want to take a math nerd who loves people and has a master's degree in education, what better spot to actually help the literacy, financial literacy of a populace than being a financial advisor, or at least what I thought a financial advisor should be. So that's how I ended up there and ended up doing very well under Adam and the tutelage there, and then got headhunted out from there to run the Convergys program with Ivari. And that was a really, really cool process. They were sort of ahead of the ahead of thinking at the time, where they had looked across the industry and seen there was a lot of management, but there wasn't necessarily a lot of true coaching, and they saw a true distinction in that. And they wanted me not just for my background as an advisor, but also that actual coaching from the sports side. And they were trying to bring sort of the best of both worlds between brokerage and career, that support level of a career agency, but in the independence of a brokerage world. And it was quite successful. But you know, things change and cultures change and everything else, and was needed to move on from there. And I was lucky enough to be introduced to Andrew Murray by a former colleague of mine. And we bit off immediately. Some people used to call me his mini me. It was a 20-minute phone call, like just in my car outside my apartment, and it was immediately like, yep, you're my guy. I've been waiting to have this call for a long time. This is perfect. Let's get going. And that was an interesting piece all in of itself, because this was coming on at Financial Horizons during essentially a hiring freeze. So without really knowing him that well, but on a first impression, I was essentially working for free for 6 months while sort of he was working in the background to try and get the buy-in internally to actually make the hire official. And it turned out my faith in Andrew was very, very well placed. Ended up starting with FH, running the Toronto office, and that expanded later on to Toronto, GTA, Barrie, Kingston, and doing a lot of the large casework. But yeah, it was faith. It could have turned out really, really poorly for me, but it ended up being really well and a very formative experience for me on that side. And then your initial question was sort of, how did I come to where I am now? How did G3 Wealth come to be? And I mean, it was sort of a natural progression of that model, right? I started out as the advisor and learning that side of things, and then dealing from the carrier perspective, doing direct coaching with some of the top-end advisors for a carrier. And then the evolution of that is to the brokerage side to see everything else. And then once I'd kind of, you know, created those relationships and gotten that experience and really started to understand, it was, okay, well, how do I do that same thing? How do I bring that ultimate service level experience to advisors and through them to their clients with even less restrictions? Opening G3 and being able to do that across all different distribution models for advising in the career shop space, in the different FGAs, that independence sort of is a theme across my career, going from captive career agent to more and more and more and more independent, being able to actually have that impact on the greater number of people without as many constraints. So I know that's a bit of a long-winded explanation, but that's the long and storied history of how I came from a newbie green pea in the industry to where I am now.
Well, that's a long journey, but you know, it's fine. Everyone's journey is different. Some people are careered out of college right into the insurance industry, and then other people, you know, we like stocks last time, but he was like, I came from consumer goods, right? So, you know, not everyone's journey is the same. Even Charlie had a mechanical engineering start.
Yeah.
Right. So it doesn't matter about where you start, it's about how you build those experiences to get to where you are today.
Yeah.
So with that, with G3 Wealth and the independent desire, what does that look like? What does that look like for you and the growth of the company, knowing that that independency is like core value to what you want to do?
I mean, it looks like to me just what everything else looks like, but with less constraints. So to me, it is the freedom to be able to work with and empower the people, firms, organizations in our industry that really spend the time, money, and resources to create better products, solutions, experiences, processes for clients. And so, you know, when I was at FH, I loved what I did, but you didn't have a lot. Like, if somebody was under your purview and they needed your help, you know, you had to do what you could. And sometimes that was productive and sometimes it wasn't. And sometimes it was spending resources with you know, so they that didn't necessarily have the best interests of someone at the heart of it. And now it really gives me the freedom to identify the people that I believe are going to be a long-term force of good for the end user, the clients in Canada, and get to help empower them so that hopefully, you know, it's accelerated Darwinism. And by that, I mean, if the people that are doing the right things for the right reasons in the right ways, if they're continuously propped up and empowered, the people that are doing things the wrong way are going to sort of die out, and the industry will evolve to be providing a better experience for Canadians. And as hokey as that is actually what my goal is.
It's a very good goal, I think. The customer needs to be the first person in mind when any decisions are being made, especially.
Yeah, like how funny is it that is a distinctive thing, right? Like that, it's something I realize in our industry. A lot of things that some of us think should be table stakes are differentiators. And what a surprise that putting clients first actually will lead to success.
Seeing your experience now, how has the industry's approach to wealth management evolved over the years, specifically when it comes to life insurance? Has life insurance been more prevalent now in wealth management strategies and agencies than it was before?
Like anything, this stuff goes through cycles, but I would say overall, yes. And I think that has to do with a couple of things. And one is the industry is getting better at the literacy part of this. We always had this amazing solution, but we weren't always really great at getting that understanding or that knowledge out to the people that could use it. The second piece is due to, you know, whether it's LICAT or the 2017 changes or just profitability, the products have evolved to become more client-centric. So they're actually adding more value in terms of flexibility and product features and everything else. So it's become an easier conversation. And all of that mixed with an ever-increasingly oppressive tax regime has led to not only is insurance specifically a better solution than it used to be, a more value-adding option for business owners, individuals that are trying to grow their wealth, the problem has gotten worse and worse and worse, and we've gotten better at helping them to actually see that opportunity. And the other side is you know, insurance from the pure risk management side. You've got the digital side coming in, and you know, you've heard the LIMRA stats for years and years and years that there's all these billions or trillions of dollars of underinsurance. And a lot of that has to do with people who want insurance don't necessarily know how or where to get it. And the industry or individuals inside the industry are really taking advantage of all the ways that they can to bring that to the forefront. You've got something like policyadvisor.com and what they've done to digitize, democratize, getting insurance, making it simple and easy for somebody to get on their phone. Like those are, there's evolution on every side that's making insurance easier to get, more beneficial, and the people that want it are finding easier pathways to get it. So I definitely think that insurance has grown as a piece of wealth management, whether that's now in growing wealth and in protecting it as well.
Yeah. I mean, I've been blessed on this podcast to be able to discuss a lot of this with industry brightest folks. What, in your view, I guess then, what are the biggest challenges that advisors and agencies are facing when adopting digital strategies? How can they overcome some of these challenges to stay relevant and keep becoming more efficient?
I mean, there's in my estimation, there's a few things. One, some people within the industry have a fundamental different way in the way that they are looking at investment or expenses inside their business. It's an interesting thing where there's a cohort of the advisory space, in my estimation, that are financial advisors and more from the side of sales. And then there's a cohort that really understands and is running a business. And to me, the key differentiator is looking at things like digital and those expenses as investments in their business. So I think that mindset change would be really helpful. It's hard when you eat what you kill and your next sort of influx of revenue, you don't know when it's coming. It can be hard to really have the long-term view to look at some of those investments and see it for the future. But I think when that mindset changes, we're going to see a lot more of it get taken up. The other piece is there are so many digital technological options out there. Which ones to choose? How to decide? Building a tech stack can be one of the most intimidating things that exists for an advisor. And that's if you're even at the point where you know the term tech stack. It's funny, we're doing the CLU update the other day, and there was a whole case study sort of around this on an advisor that was looking at what technology they currently had and what they wanted to grow and really figuring out, okay, what's important to them and their business, and then making decisions around that. So I think really getting to understand where their business is at, where an advisor's business is at, and what can be made better with technology, and then sifting through the hundreds and hundreds of options to kind of get it down to a core few that are really going to add the most value. I mean, you don't need extra tech that's really not doing much. Start small, and then scale it up from there. So to me, it's, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. One of the things that I would tell to advisors is don't put yourself in a situation where tech is going to overwhelm. Find one piece that you think is going to add some value and some efficiency for you, and then go from there. You know, where is a great place to start? LDA. It's a pretty good tech piece that can add a lot of efficiency to your practice. It's not a paid plug, but you know me, I'm a big supporter. So,
well, if you weren't going to support the program, I'd have to kick you out of the podcast now. But that's, you passed the test. But seriously, though, like even for financial planners, you know, we do deal with a lot of financial planners that are not based like 100% in insurance. They do the wealth management plans, and one of the things we've been talking about lately is it's an inevitability that when building a financial plan with clients, you're going to find a liability. You're going to find one. And so what's the process like for you, and what do you tell your team is when you find this liability, how do you build an insurance plan for that liability? And how have programs like Lightside Analysis changed how you can build those insurance cases for those liabilities?
So it's interesting. So there's two sides of it. So we'll start with the liability side, right? Which is when you're looking at your plan, you've got, all right, we're trying to grow this amount of money, and then we're going to use that money for you to fund your retirement. And then hopefully all goes to plan and you're going to kick the bucket at a ripe old age. And then the CRA comes a calling. So there is a liability, but maybe it's a short term that you've got a loan outstanding, whatever it is. It's figuring out what that liability is, and then positioning the different ways to address that problem. There's no cookie cutter solution, which I think, especially when looking at financial planning, there has been a tendency to be like, oh, here's a solution, and then just plugging it into everyone. My personal is I don't make decisions for clients. I empower them to make decisions from an informed perspective. So let's say we're looking at that estate liability. Your financial plan says you're going to build this money, you're going to spend this amount, this is what you're going to die with, and this is how much you're going to owe the government. Okay, well, that is a liability that is going to exist at some point. It's not short term, so we're looking at a permanent solution. So now, what are those? It can be cheap and cheerful for cash flow and a T100. It can be, you know, the same sort of idea, but with some more flexibility and a universal life policy. It can be the extra bells and whistles of a participating whole life. Maybe we want to pay that forever to keep cash flow better. Maybe the values of the client are more important and they don't want to be paying premiums 15, 20 years from now. So what I tend to do is present a group of, not too many, you can't present a million things, but let's say three or four best in breed options. So let's say we're going to look at a T100, 20-pay UL and 10 deposits for a participating whole life strategy. Instead of what we could then do is really show them apples to apples, and LDA becomes this wonderful spot to do that. It's easily digestible. It works for visual learners. If they're an engineer or a nerd like me and they want to get into the numbers, they can. But it really shows the efficiencies of these different things. It helps contextualize this in a, okay, it's not about the price, it's about the value. And it allows clients to take a look at that and say, okay, well, I get the benefits of this. And looking at these, I choose this one. Because one of the things that I had to figure out early on in my career that was very powerful was what I think is important is irrelevant. It's what the client thinks is important. And you know, sometimes I've done analyses with LDA, whatever it is. And in my estimate, the client ended up deciding on what to me and my math background and everything else was by far the worst solution, and ask them why. And it could be something as simple as that company. My dad had a policy with that company and he died when I was young, and that company paid out and it kept me and my sisters off the street. And so that security or perceived security that it was going to pay out was more important than, to me, what the projections were showing of an extra $1 million or whatever else it is. So to me, it's once you've identified what that liability is, do the homework in the background to figure out sort of what are the best options you want to show, but then show them and provide context around what the benefits are and let the client choose which one is most in line with their values. And I found that to be incredibly powerful. It's not sort of a, okay, am I going to get this or not kind of questions. It's really buying questions. You end up almost immediately in the, all right, which one of these am I going to end up getting?
That's something we see a lot, even with my own personal experience. We bought a house recently and we're going through the mortgage, and we chose one mortgage option over another simply because of the bank offering.
Yeah.
Now we took a slightly higher rate because I had had such bad experiences with the first company that I was like, I can't put another product with you when I've had such bad experience in the past. So obviously every customer is going to make their own decision, but it's important that we offer the solutions and we show them in a very compliance-based manner that we have shown them every option they have available to them so that they can make that educated decision on their own.
It's exactly, like, that's the perfect example. And it's not only are we making them a part of the process and making them feel, you know, some ownership in it, but that's also taking sort of relationship or business risk off the table. Right. Nobody's ever going to come back to that client that, well, okay, well, why didn't Graham show you this? Right. You can sleep soundly at night knowing not only did you show the best options and best, you know, things for the client, but that you're not going to get backdoored down the road.
Yeah. And that's important for the comfort of your own client and building that customer relationship and engaging with them, as well as for your own personal security. Now, with client engagement, how does G3 Wealth prioritize client engagement within this rapidly evolving landscape? What specific engagement tactics do you find work the best or have been proven most efficient?
So this is a really interesting thing, because this is at the heart of everything that we do, is this way of engaging. And it's funny that this, you know, we're talking about client engagement, but I actually look at this and go a step further, and it's engagement of all stakeholders along the process, but we'll start with client engagement, right? Like I've alluded to it a little bit, but I've really found that one of the sort of flaws that our industry has been working on is we make really smart people feel stupid with, you know, acronyms and jargon and sort of colloquial industry speak. And so one of the simplest things that I've found is sort of engage clients the way that they would want to be engaged, which is like, one, figure out a way to have the conversations simply and relatably. You don't need to use words or acronyms or anything else. And not to be an insult, figure out how you can explain it as if you were explaining it to an 8-year-old, because that's what Einstein would tell you shows mastery of something. But figuring out communication tools to be able to get that across really simply. In my case, I try to get everything down to one number, and I really show, let's use insurance as an example. Instead of going through a large illustration or anything else, positioning it as it relates to tax, in terms of, you know, if somebody is going to be investing some of their capital, it's gonna lose some of what it earns, whether that's to tax or to fees or to costs. They don't really care. They care what's left in their pocket. So if you can just say, all right, if you're gonna invest some capital, would you rather keep 50 cents, 60 cents, 75 cents, or 85 cents of every dollar that you make? Things like that, just ways of relating it back. And the other piece is start to do it the way they really want to have that conversation. So things like first meetings. A lot of advisors start in their discovery meeting with a fact find. And honestly, sometimes, and if you've got the relationship, there's nothing really wrong with that. But my personal thought was an early fact find is asking for information that we haven't earned the right to. Yeah, like if I come to you, Matt, and I'm just like, hey, I've got some things I want to talk to you about. Will you give me your social insurance number and how much money you have in the bank? And like that's probably going to get your back up. So if I can, the way I look at it is if I can come in and show some value and really help a client to understand, okay, this is the conversation we're having. This is what I can expect and hope for. Now, when I go and ask for that information, it's in service of that value that they're already looking for. So the engagement tactics is keep it simple, keep it relatable, and try and add some value and have a quick and easy way to get the client interested before asking for too much information.
That's a good strategy. I know when I did my insurance policy that there was definitely a lot of times like I was like, what is happening? And then not from Darren, my insurance advisor at all. But if you listen to the episode, we had, we did the medical in the background, and then one of the insurance carriers, I'm not going to name them because I don't want to give them any undue attention, but they called me after and then did it on the phone. And I was like, okay, well, whatever, I'll just do it. And when I told Darren after that they called me to do another medical on the phone, he was, they shouldn't have done that. I already provided them all that information. There's no reason for them to do that. So that's how I was like, oh, oops. Didn't realize that we were getting doubled up here.
I think that's a really good point too. Like another piece is setting expectations, right? Like I always say, you know, clients can deal with, things not going as well, but like surprises, not an easy thing to deal with. So like set up that process. Like for you using your experience as an example, like wouldn't it have been nice? Would you have appreciated kind of knowing or at least having an expectation of what was going to be coming up all the way through the process and not having to be a surprise?
Well, for sure. And Darren did his best to tell me what was happening. And then it was because he had to actually go back to those carriers and be like, you shouldn't have done that. He had to go to his MGA and they kind of pushed it up the ladder because there was a couple things that they're like, that shouldn't have happened. Like and if I hadn't have told him, he would never have known that those things got duplicated or done again.
Which is the tough part of being an advisor, right? You can cross every T and dot every I and do everything you can. Like things are going to mess up. Like people are human, organizations are fallible. It's one of the toughest things that I had to learn in the industry was, you know what, like that stuff's going to happen. Give people the opportunity to do the right thing. When they mess up, don't get immediately upset and get your back up against the wall. It's most of the time a mistake. And when given the chance, companies, carriers, whoever, MGAs will take the opportunity to do the right thing. But then also have a nice backup plan.
We know that there is definitely a shift in how things are happening. We've talked about it this whole episode, but there's a shift now between the carriers wanting to do underwriting digitally. They want to have this application submitted digitally. They want a digital record of the client. They want the advisors to be doing it all digitally. They want the advisors then to put the, like, event. It would be wonderful if there was eventually a spot where you could do like your medical, your everything, just all remotely digitally and have that all accessible like instantaneously instead of having these wait times. That would, I mean, I think that's what this shift to, again, we cut back to the carriers, like that's a profitability thing. If they can do this remotely and efficiently quickly, that'll cut down the application and underwriting time, which will increase the speed which they can get those applications completed.
I definitely think so. And what it's funny because what you don't hear a lot of the times in that is, yeah, it, obviously it's a profitability thing, but you hear it from generally from the carrier side of that perspective. But what gets kind of lost in that, and I think should really be the focus, is part of the other reason why it becomes really profitable is those quicker turnaround times, that less friction. That's a way better experience for the client. And I think, you know, a lot of carriers that are trying to do the right things for the right reason would benefit from communicating it in a different way that would help get buy-in from clients and advisors. Because regardless of whether it's more efficient, it's different for a lot of advisors. They've been doing something the same way for decades. And so a change like that, even if it is going to make their lives better and their clients' lives better and they're going to get paid quicker and all these different things, it's still change management. And I think that's probably the place where the communication has fallen down the most. But then you look at, you know, you're talking about stocks and Empire, like they understand behaviorism. They knew that these were all these things that were going to be better for people in the long run. But instead of just asking for it, they built a system that incentivized all of those stakeholders to come and join them on that journey. And surprise, surprise, it worked. So, yeah, I agree with you totally that, you know, these are things that are coming out, but that certain carriers are doing a good job of communicating it and are getting better buy-in, and some aren't.
Yeah, I think there's also a hesitation from some of the older, I'd say like the old guard of the insurance carrier advisors, is losing the personal touch with these online processes. They really don't want to lose that personal touch because they have been doing it their way for so long. But with the changes in balancing of technology, we can really see that you can still maintain that personal touch and client relationships. So what advice would you give to advisors who are struggling with that feeling of they're maybe losing that touch?
It's such a good question, and it's something I've had these discussions, I don't want to call them arguments, with a lot of people across the industry, from the carriers, from distribution, from everywhere else, is that initial knee jerk of like, you can't replace the water cooler, you can't, you know, replace in person. And yeah, I mean, for at the heart of it, you can't replace it, but you really can use, if you take all of the technology that's at our disposal, you can recreate that same feeling, that same personal touch, and even make it better than it was in person, because you can sort of do the same thing without a client having to get in their car and go to your office, or, you know, have somebody in their kitchen at 8 o'clock at night while their kids are running around. You know, being able to engage technology, because at the end, like, it's not the fact that you were there in person that was special, right? That if you've been doing this, it's that you were able to create a personal connection with that client or with that person on the other side of the table. You're still you. You still have that personality. One of the things that I saw a lot, especially early in COVID, I was lucky. I adapted Zoom 5 months before COVID happened, just because I was putting so many miles on my or kilometers on my car. But one of the things that I saw really early was people treated it differently. And maybe it was because of who I am, or maybe it's because I had been doing it for so long. But one of the things that I think was really helpful for me is I didn't treat Zoom or Teams or anything else differently than being in person is there's still somebody there. You still have the conversation as if they were there. And trust me, that same personal connection that you, the advisor, was making with your clients in person will be there if you use some of this technology properly. So that would be my biggest sort of advice, is just do what you've always done. Just find ways to enhance it and to make it simpler and easier for your clients using technology.
Yeah, I also feel like it's easier to be available.
Which is a good thing and a bad thing, right? Like it really is great that, you know, your clients know they can get a hold of you at different times, that they don't have to have an appointment to get into the office. But then that we all know that can lead to some issues too.
Mm-hmm. But the point where I was going was that the availability option allows you to still hold that personal touch. Darren was on the East Coast. We had never met face-to-face, obviously through Zoom, but I didn't feel like I lost a personal connection to him, because he would text me, he would call me, we had set up Zoom calls. Like, it was available that I didn't have to lose that. And I think that's something that sometimes the transitionary period into this digital process, that's something that people fear. But like you said, it's a good thing and a bad thing that you can be available at all times to answer those questions, answer concerns, touch base, touch back. Like those points, those moments of engagement are always going to be around and are always going to be readily available, especially with the digital transformation.
Yeah. And it's hard, because like me, I'm the guy who says to clients, advisors, whoever, I'm like, you call me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean it. And like I always say, I'll pick up or I'll text you and say, hey, I'm drunk, I'll call you tomorrow. But I actually mean that. But I know not everybody is in that fortuitous scenario to have, you know, a really understanding spouse and everything else, or to not have, you know, kids yet. Like I get that not everybody's in that situation. But yeah, like, I mean, that is the real beauty of this, is your clients can feel connected to you even when they're not in your office. And I think, it's that transitionary period, and breaking through is always really hard. But if you better get started, because you're going to need to do it eventually, unless you are running the one practice on the planet that has all your clients who haven't ever and don't want to ever use a computer or a cell phone or anything else. I'm sure there's one out there. But it's just, it's where everything seems to be going, and you know, it's not going to be as painful as it seems like it's going to be. So my suggestion would be, get started on it, go down that, see what the issues that are there for you, and then, you know, lean on the resources in your circle to help you through it.
And as we wrap up 2024, that kind of goes hand in hand with the ability to engage with their clients to end off the year and make sure that you're wrapping up and having a year-end meeting with the clients to go over their policies and make sure that everything's covered. What are some ways that you have used to engage with your clients and reinforce those relationships to set the stage for successful year-end and going into the following year?
I think the biggest thing is setting those expectations immediately, right? Like when a policy gets sold, it's not, all right, great, and then showing up sometime, it's saying, hey, how often do you want to touch base? What are some important things? And then, so knowing that, let's say, you know, you've got a complex, you've got an IFA, a policy that has a loan on it, you need to touch base. It's setting those touch points early, and then setting those expectations. But it's really showing that touch point isn't a burden, but that there is a point to it and that there is a positive outcome associated with it. Like it maybe I'm lucky, but when I have those touch points with clients, they know that it's coming and they're expecting it and they're appreciating it in advance. I really think it's about how you set it up, but you can take advantage of it. It's a great time to figure out, you know, what has changed. for a client. Their situation's definitely not going to be the same. And generally, you know, that might be, you know, something tough, whether, you know, some health issues or anything else, but a lot of times it's something good. It's, you know, had another kid, got married, you know, the business did well, whatever it is. Those touch points at year end are really great times to show one, that your clients are more than just a number or a policy or a fund that you have them in, that you understand and appreciate them as a whole. And when you get to understand the things that are going on in their lives and the other people that are a part of it, it becomes really good opportunities to either spot opportunities for more sort of products, that more gaps to fill in their overall planning, or other people in their circle that might appreciate the experience that they've had with you. So it's a really great opportunity to get referrals, to, you know, to expand the portfolio of solutions that you've got with a client, and really set up those relationships for the next year and for many, many years going forward. It's also, you know, you can sell a policy and you can have a reputation, but to me, it's about your reputation is really about the things that you do repeatedly. It's the habits that you have, and those start with your first year-end review or touch point after a policy goes in place, and every subsequent one expands your brand, your identity, your relationship with that client.
Mm-hmm. I asked this question to a lot of people. I haven't asked in a few episodes, so I think this is a good time. What advice would you give an advisor starting into the industry today? Or if you were going back to look at your beginning self, what would you tell yourself?
It's great. I was having this conversation with a really great young new advisor at an event a couple weeks ago. There's a lot of advice, but the biggest thing is the couple that I focus on is go find some people that you admire and respect and want to emulate. Right? They don't be the smartest person in the room. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. Go find some people that are really good at this that you admire. And the nice thing about our industry is you don't have a whole lot of holding it to the chest. A lot of those people are very willing and open to download as much as that can or help newer advisors. So take advantage of that. And then take what you get from those people that you admire and you emulate, but, or that you want to emulate, but don't be a carbon copy. Really, really understand who you are, the positives, the negatives of that, and take all of those things from these other people or from the industry and try to figure out how to have them come across in your voice. Because at the end of the day, you're what clients are buying. You're the star of the show. And if you're the best copy of somebody else, will never be as good as the learning, growing version of you. It just, that authenticity comes across really, really sharply for clients. And, you know, don't be afraid to fall on your face. Right? You're not made of glass. You getting punched in the face and realizing that you're still here, that you haven't died, is one of the best things ever. Every time you fall on your face or you make a mistake, it's just an opportunity to get better and to learn. So if you make a lot of mistakes, you're going to end up being a better advisor. And I know those are a lot of the tough things that new advisors have issues with, is that sort of reluctance or that, I don't want to call it fear, but yeah, reluctance maybe is a good word. Man, just go out and do it. And don't be afraid to fall on your face, because I promise you, you'll come out the other side better.
That's some really good advice. It's always the first step is the hardest, is what they always say, but it's the most accurate statement I've ever heard. Well, thank you very much, Graham, for joining me today. Where can people find you? And is there anything you'd like to plug in here for the folks listening?
You can find me on LinkedIn via, you know, you can email me, Graham at g3-wealth.com. LDAGroup.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me online. You can find me probably at an industry event somewhere around if you're there. Anything I really want to plug? No, I want to plug LDA, right? Like, I want to thank you for having me on. Those of you who have worked with me or who know me know that LDA is at the heart of what I do. It is a tool that I think has added more value to my practice and being able to really help clients with their literacy and understanding of the opportunities that exist. If you're an advisor that has always wanted to be in that high net worth, more complex case space, and you're feeling sort of overwhelmed or that you don't know how to do it, give me a shout. That is one of the areas where I have made my bones, is in helping advisors to become really, really successful in that space. So more than happy to provide my experience or knowledge. So, but yeah, other than that, plug in LDA, plug in, you know, the industry as a whole. And we need to, we've gone through a lot of change in the last 5 to 10 years. I think we're probably going to go through more change in the next 5 or 10 than we have in the last 20 or 30. But I think it's all going to be for the good. I think we're seeing a space where the advisors that are doing things for the right reasons and taking advantage of the tools at their disposal are going to see a lot of benefit. And the advisors that aren't are going to, I guess, unfortunately for them, but probably fortunately for the client and for the industry, are going to find themselves, you know, in a tough position. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, thank you very much again, Graham, for coming on and chat with me today. It's always a pleasure. I'll see you around an Advocates Golf event this summer.
Oh, that would be nice.
I'm sure that we'll get out. If not, we'll have to have you come down to London and we'll go out for a round.
Oh, yeah. Always worth the drive out that way. So, yeah, let me know.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for coming on today and have yourself a wonderful day.
You too. Talk to you later, Matt.
Are you looking for the perfect way to kick off the new year with life insurance practice? Well, we are releasing this episode on Black Friday, and what better way to save than now? Until December 15th, use code BLACKFRIDAY25 to receive 25% off your annual subscription at LDA for all new users. You can try it for free yourself for 15 days and see why we are the preferred life insurance platform for 12,000 advisors across Canada. Go to www.lifedesignanalysis.com/sign-up. That's SIGN-UP. And use code BLACKFRIDAY25 for 25% off your first year's subscription. Terms and conditions do apply. And that's a wrap for this episode of Policy Pod by LDA. I want to extend another thank you to Graham Bergsma for coming on and chatting with me today. As we begin to wrap up 2024 and look to 2025, we are starting a call for guests for the coming year. If there is a topic you would like to hear talked about or one that you consider yourself an expert in, I would love to hear from you. You can email me at marketing@lifedesignanalysis.com or join our LinkedIn group, Policy Pod by LDA, as well as connect with me on LinkedIn and we can start the conversation there. Thank you again for listening, and I look forward to our next episode.